Okay, thank you. So for me, this is going to be a very different talk because I was asked specifically to talk about from an industrial perspective. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to start explain what it is that we do from an industrial perspective. Right. Then I'm going to actually kind of stop transiently talking about unsolved problems, because that's what I was asked to speak about, but give you a tiny bit of background in one particular problem, and then kind of continue on in terms of just unsolved problem and unsolved problem from the point of view of a person who goes around to hospitals and does consulting, and we keep on growing. Right? So as the background, officially I guess my PhD is in engineering, but what I know is stochastic optimization, parameter estimation type problems, basically scientific programming. When you ask in terms of are hospitals using these different types of techniques, one of the things is Brian very, you know, kind of focused on problems which are very active research problems. But particularly when it comes to anesthesia group management and scheduling, there are quite a lot of problems which are highly solved. And I gradually got kind of frustrated not watching companies using the techniques, and gradually the University of Iowa is in the statistical consulting business. The University of Iowa has a long culture from educational testing and basically and have essentially statistical consulting, so to speak. So the structure would be in a medical college, just like people might go who are doing, say, rat studies, and they would go to a statistical consulting center and say, hey, can you help us, you know, analyze this data? Internally, we do the same thing externally. And gradually over the years, it's just sort of grown and grown and grown. These are not research projects. Typically, places want answers in 3 to 4 days. My experience is identical to Brian, that places in these academic hospitals, these are large systems. My experience is they have a problem. It bubbles to the surface. They want an answer in the next 5 days. We deliver to them software that is already in process. It's already developed and so forth. We get them quick answers. The problem kind of goes away. Sometimes later it bubbles up. I'm always looking for research problems, but that's not what I'm going to talk about. For people who are kind of interested in stuff like that, you can go to this www.franklindexter.net. The University of Iowa has the hyperlink, but they keep on changing the hyperlink, and there's no way you'd ever remember it or know about it or so forth. But we have a course, and so much of what I do is I've got computer programmers who are employed and so forth. We contract for their time. I keep on going to places and giving a 3.5-day course repeatedly in terms of teaching analysts at hospitals about the methods for which there are solutions, how they already have the skills to solve these problems in operating room management. They just don't realize that they have the skills to solve these problems in operating room management. Very often these are hospital financial analysts. They're very comfortable with things like bonds. They don't know, however, how those techniques apply to operating rooms. So those would be groups of people who would come to these courses. Partly I'm required because part of the University of Iowa College of Medicine to always do financial disclosure. But in this circumstance, I think it's actually very important in terms of understanding why am I here from an industry perspective? How do we actually make this happen? The first thing about the way the University of Iowa decided to structure this is that my salary is determined by some completely magical process from the state legislature, and as far as I can tell, there's absolutely no relationship to anything that I do to whether I get a 1% raise or a 2% raise or this year a 0% raise and so forth. So we've set up a system of for everybody who does the work at the University of Iowa, it's a complete separation. And on the one hand, it could be bad for us potentially. You could say it's good for us potentially depending upon the revenue stream. But the University of Iowa is definitely in the research business, but we are in the consulting business to some extent. The group is entirely break-even. So the more money that we bring in from the consulting, it's 100% goes in terms of research. Again, that's good news and it's bad news. So we do have a lot of research that we do. Very often the structure is a hospital will ask a question of us, and we'll look at it and we'll say, we don't have an answer for you now. In fact, we probably aren't going to have an answer for you in the next 4 months. But if you're interested, we'll kind of split the cost in some way, particularly if they have interesting research problems. But that's not what I'm going to talk about at this point. I'm really going to talk about it from the point of view of what are the problems that hospitals come to us and ask about, in which I have no real ability to answer their questions currently. The first one I'm going to talk about is issues involving education and mathematics and how to get people into the hospitals. And I'm going to explain this from the point of view of a problem that is very high profile in anesthesia, success story, so to speak. And I'm going to describe this particular implementation of success at one particular hospital, a case study, but describe the problem is that I have no understanding of how to get that technology out to 1,000-plus hospitals. Now, when I do, for example, when most hospitals contact the University of Iowa and we're doing things in 3 to 4 days, it's because we understand how to solve problems for which we're making decisions 2 months before the day of surgery. For example, how do I match the staffing to the workload? Much of what I'm going to be talking about today are decisions that involve decisions on the day of surgery. So because it's decisions on the day of surgery, the problem and challenge is I think there have to be people there at the hospital who are knowledgeable and are working with the information systems in order to get the technology out there. And just as Brian mentioned in terms of challenges working with big vendors, I don't understand the return on investment for the vendors for reasons involving the architectural diversity of the hospitals. And I'm going to talk about that topic quite a lot. But as Brian was talking about the importance of future research and understanding how physical architecture affects performance, I think this interaction with information systems. So I'm going to start with the success story at one hospital, use it as some background in terms of the same types of problems as I go along. This particular problem, we got very high profile in one of the journals. They have cover art, for example, in terms of the lead article. We were the lead article. And I'll describe the problem in terms of a doubleheader. When the hospitals that are particularly concerned about decision-making on the day of surgery aren't the ones that have 20 cases in a row, except for endoscopy, where it's a very big and kind of a different type of problem involving multiple rooms. Very often is situations when you only have 2 cases per operating room per day, and they're long cases. And one of the reasons it's quite challenging is, first of all, these are non-preemptive tasks. So you're not going to stop in the middle. So you have the period of the greatest amount of variability is during the period that's non-preemptive. So if I think of the airline industry, which I don't know much about, there's a period when the plane is in flight, which is non-preemptive. But the period is relatively predictable in duration, whereas you have large amount of uncertainty before the wheels are up and once the wheels are down. Whereas in the operating room, we have very small sample sizes per day in those hospitals that are interested in this type of technology, but the period of the greatest amount of uncertainty is the period that's non-preemptive. The second thing is we were talking about what makes tertiary hospitals unique is they specialize in rare combinations of procedures. There are lots of procedure codes in the book, right? So, for example, my wife's a general thoracic surgeon. On the one hand, she has a large amount of training from a clinical point of view. However, when you look at the specific combinations of procedures that she performs, there are very few things that she does more than one time per year. It isn't that this has anything to do with lack of clinical skill. It's that there's so many different combinations of procedures. And there also is when she schedules cases very often, although there will be official terminology, in retrospect you know exactly what the procedure is performed. In fact, when you think it from a task duration point of view, it depends upon the results as she'll do the surgery on the patient and wait while the pathologist looks at the specimen and then she decides what to do there. Or she'll see an anatomic variation and she decides what to do there. That's what surgery is all about. So you have these tasks that are very unpredictable duration. So the challenge, how does this relate, for example, to a doubleheader? How do you figure out the time, when you want to figure out the start time of the second case, based on the time remaining of the preceding case, and as soon as you finish one case, you're going to start the next case. So you need probabilistically now to talk about probability distributions of, okay, the time remaining in surgical cases. But you need to have to incorporate the fact that many cases are very rare combinations of procedures. So how do you incorporate the fact that many cases are rare combinations of procedures? Is you use Bayesian methods, all right, for similar types of things, your prior knowledge that you may employ. And very soon I'm going to get to why we have a very large unsolved problem. It's not the statistics piece. Now, how was it that this became, this particular paper was such a success from a scientific point of view? Because here's what we found. On the one hand, this is running completely autonomous in an automatic method at the hospital, which the paper was talked about. The key result is, in fact, is not the fact that it's running, it's what we found. So here we have the time. Initially, if you've got a surgical case that you scheduled for an hour, and at 9 o'clock you start, how much time would you expect to have remaining? About an hour. So at 9 o'clock you've got 1 hour. But as the case progresses, initially you have a linear decline in time. That makes sense. So if you think it's going to take an hour and it's 9:15, all right, how much time do you probably have left? 45 minutes. But from the fact in terms of the hazard function, it turns out that progressively, as you approach the amount of time you planned, it's nearly memory less. The reason that this is of such a high interest level in the anesthesia community is how do people typically do it in management? They call the room or they go to the room and they say, what time do you think you'll be done by? How much longer? But they don't want to do arithmetic every 5 minutes. They don't say, how many minutes longer? What time do you think you're going to be done by? So you have a clipboard, for example, and for each of the cases late in the afternoon, you write down the estimate of the time at which you think the case is going to be done. But what's the problem? Late in the afternoon, almost every case you have are ones that have taken longer than average. But the number of minutes should be constant. So in fact, every 5 minutes, you should be adding 5 minutes to the time of all of the times of the cases that are ongoing. So what was learned from this is, from the scientific observation, why is it that this particular case study, right, nearly revolutionized decision making on the day of surgery at this hospital was for this reason. But trust me, I'm going to get to a very big problem because it's still one hospital. Now, is it as simple as saying, no problem, we'll take a commercial system with a big whiteboard, for example, and we'll simply do arithmetic. So if, for example, we'll ask people in the room how many minutes longer, if they say 10 minutes, every 10 minutes we just add a constant amount of time. Is it that simple? Well, the problem is no. Because if you look at the probability distribution of once you level out, at what value you level out, there's a wide, wide range among cases. And that wide range can be estimated from historical data, which is the Bayesian method. We show that the method works and is valid and accurate and so forth. That's not the problem. Well, why in practice, the commercial products assume that the operating room times are deterministic on the day of surgery, which is completely not the case, not the circumstance. And I don't know of a return on investment type analysis for commercial products for decision making on the day of surgery to incorporate these stochastic methods. And that is why the hospitals that use these types of methods on the day of surgery, unlike the statistical consulting we do, tend to have one person at each hospital who tends to have data that gets exported from the operating room information system on a regular basis, and they have a server and they do some local custom programming, right? And what appears and is done autonomously is separate from the commercial database system. So you have local managerial decision support. This is from, there's a person who studies, from an industrial engineering point of view, cognitive type processes for decision making in operating rooms, Yan Zhao. This is a picture of a board used for decision making on the day of surgery at a trauma center. Right? You can't see it from a distance, but you can see a lot of artifacts, pieces of paper and things like that. Notice that for this non-commercial product, highly non-commercial, this is phenomenally useful. Because it revolves around decision-making that is among operating rooms. The notes, the structure of it, isn't one row at a time. It's very across-row oriented, which are the decisions that need to be made. In contrast, I'm going to show you a commercial product I think is a wonderful, wonderful product, okay? But not for this purpose, which is, and they have a nice website, so I was able to take the image. So I'm very impressed by the DocuSys system, so I'm not in any way trying to besmirch it. I think it's a great product for making decisions one patient at a time. What is clinical decision support about? Clinical decision support is one patient at a time, one row at a time. What is the problem in terms of the return on investment type analysis from the information system companies? Decision support on the day of surgery, which is purchased for clinical decision support, is one row at a time. What I'm talking about is among patients. That's the focus of managerial decision making. The problem at an unsolved level, as I look upon it, isn't so much the statistical analysis. There absolutely, over the next decade, will be a number of groups that will work in this area. People will find improvements and things like that. But one of the things that Brian mentioned about when you add age, gender, and these different characteristics of patient factors into it, I try, other groups try, they try. You know what we do? We improve things by 4%, 5%. We have enormous sample sizes, so the p-values are 10 to the minus 12. There's going to be very small amounts of improvement. There is the inherent problem is there's large amounts of variability in the system. Yes, there will be statistical improvements. And yes, those problems are valuable. I don't think it's really the big problem. The big problem, in order to have made this happen at this particular hospital, was the fact that it was automatic. Now, what do I mean by this automatic type issue? Where do we get the data for decision making on the day of surgery? Now, let me separate it from the type of stuff we do that the University of Iowa provides commercially versus this type of work. For the stuff that we're doing where people send data and they get this, for example, within 1 or 2 days we give them the answer, they have historical data, right? And the historical data is provided. No problem. In retrospect, it's easy. But for decision making on the day of surgery, where does the data come in real time? Where is the source of the data? I personally find that the idea of having physicians and nurses adding to their workload of trying to document things in real time is ludicrously absurd. It's not going to happen, right? Because the reason that they're there and they're motivated is to take care of patients. And if you're the patient, you know what you want them to do? To focus on you, the patient, not on trying to document. So here's a picture of a typical anesthesia workstation without an electronic anesthesia information system. Now, deliberately, it's one of my colleagues over there in the corner, but there's a patient here. But I decided I cut off the patient because to show you what the person sees. Now, in this particular situation, there's paper documentation, a paper system. But there are, however, vital signs. These are like heart rate and EKG, heart rate, pulse oximetry, blood pressure, and so forth of the patient. So we have continuous physiological signals. The continuous physiological signals are basically saying, patient is here, patient is here. There's a patient in the operating room. The ventilator is going up and down. All right? Ventilators don't go up and down if there isn't a patient in the operating room. So again, we have lots of networked signals coming from the operating room saying, there's a patient in the room. From a managerial point of view, it actually doesn't matter that much if you know which patient is in the room, if you have occasional errors in that knowledge. From a safety point of view, that may be important, but from the managerial decision-making point of view, not so much. How is it that we have this system at this hospital running nonstop for more than 2 years? It's because we use the networked vital signs to get the information. There's zero human involvement. It's completely automatic. Right? But again, we're getting to the problem. So what we learned is that provided you do these things from an autonomous way, you can get decision support on the day of surgery. You can get the statistics, actually running at hospitals, and it continues to go on its own, right, functioning just fine. All of this is the good news. What's the problem? What are the skills required to make this happen at another hospital, and another hospital, and 1,000 other hospitals? Well, first of all, there is some scientific programming. The scientific programming can be done by one person, and you can sell the software, you can have a disk. That's really not the problem. Right? There's scientific programming to be done. It's very, very limited. It's not the problem. You also have, there's got to be some use of the signals. That's important. That's not the problem. Who is going to install this at every single hospital? Who is going to maintain the system? Therein lies the dilemma. Now, one of the challenges is that it's very hard for me in terms of like which hospital I want to pick on, so to speak, but the University of Iowa deserves it. And it's very easy for me to kind of talk about the University of Iowa. And I'm going to use them as an example again and again. I will tell you that this is the most common question that I get. So, for example, a couple of weeks ago, in a health system in Michigan, I'm helping them learn the statistical analysis we've done for them. First day, I'm at a lunch, you know, kind of an opportunity people can ask questions. How do we figure out who is going to manage the anesthesia information system at our hospital? Next day, a different group, the hospital analyst. Who is going to manage decision support on the day of surgery? We can't get this from a commercial vendor. No kidding, you can't get it from a commercial vendor. Next day, a different group, same question, again and again and again. Whether it's dinners, where there's hospitals, whatever I'm doing, this is the most common question. Who and where are these people going to come from? So let me give an example from the university. This particular work was done by a contract. The University of Iowa paid, basically gave, donated my time, so to speak, to another hospital, right? That was kind of the trade. I worked with the other hospital to implement, so we would bring it back to the university. Sounds great. Before we did this, of course, we had budgeted to hire the computer pro, the person who is going to implement this at, and maintain it at the University of Iowa. No problem. So I'm going to use the University of Iowa as the example and the challenge. I don't know how it works at the University of Toronto, but at the University of Iowa, before you interview somebody, you have to submit to the university all the interview questions that you're going to do. The job description, I wanted somebody who was comfortable with scientific programming in an operations research sort of way. We included the word stochastic programming and linear programming and anesthesia information systems in the title of the job. So I recommended to my colleagues that I was going to ask some very basic questions. And one of the questions I was going to do is say is, all right, if you have a series of heart rate signals, okay, how would you use this for managerial decision making? Because that is completely the job description, the job purpose of the job. That was the question. I remember my colleagues were kind of like, why are you even trying to ask that? Anybody who has worked in anesthesia information systems ever would know that and find it insulting. I'm like, we got to ask that. I also said is, I'm going to, in terms of the title of the job was to do linear programming and routine, okay, for programming. I'm going to ask people, what is linear programming? So, again, their question is, why are we asking that if that's what the job description is? But here's what the problem was that I found. The people who had the informatics, the scientific programming type background, didn't have the background in the analysis of the physiological signals. So when I, for example, got my PhD in biomedical engineering, there were quite a lot of people who got master's degrees to go clinical engineering in hospitals. And many of them went to work for anesthesia departments. To them, this would be straightforward and stuff like that. But they weren't taking courses in industrial engineering or operations research. But in contrast, right, the people who have, for example, the informatics background like that, they all thought linear programming was linear regression. And herein lies the dilemma. And this is the most common problem that I get asked. Where are these people going to come from? And what is it about the education? Notice that I haven't talked about the idea of industrial engineering, mathematics, statistics, and so forth in healthcare. Because that's not what I'm asked. right? Because I do things involving anesthesia and surgery, it's those things that really overlap, let's say, with biomedical engineering. It's physiology. It's anesthesia information systems. It's not image processing in radiology. It's not, for example, robotics as applies to pathology labs or so forth. So it's very specific areas of healthcare in terms of the domain knowledge. And therein lies the dilemma. How to train these different individuals and where they're going to come from. And it isn't a situation, for example, that you might go to work for a company, right? And that company, let's say Lockheed Martin or something like that, would hire engineers who are doing RF engineering and will train them for several years because they work part of large groups, all of whom are doing this. In most of the situations, the hospitals are going to hire one person only to do this. And they're going to be in isolation, so to speak. So they've got to have that training before they get to the hospital. I don't have a solution for it. But typically, at this point, what oftentimes, if for example, if I'm asking people at dinner and so forth, what people will tell me is, for example, is how they teach classes or how they have their curriculum and so forth. What I perceive is from an industrial point of view, as somebody who's in the business of hiring people and recommending the hiring of people for a lot of what I do, there needs to be solid educational research. Not people's opinions about how to have a curriculum. Research. Honest to goodness, educational research. Just like there are randomized clinical trials in healthcare, education should have the same level of standard. And I perceive in terms of the problems of industrial engineering and mathematics for use of the burning questions that I can't answer in hospitals for decision making on the day of surgery, that is the key element. Not to give opinions, because I'm tired, they don't want my opinion, so to speak. All right? They want to have an answer. And I don't mean in terms of solving it, what is actually known. I'm going to keep on with this topic as I go through some other problems. The next one, which is somewhat is related, is that we've learned the idea of trying to obtain and fuse information that's not being used, provided for managerial purposes, but use it for managerial purposes. So I'll give an example. One problem which is quite mature from a stochastic optimization point of view in operating rooms is matching staffing to workload in the recovery room. Right. There, ideally, you have zero weight from the operating room to the recovery room. You have a set covering problem. You can match the staffing to the workload. The solutions are not mathematically optimal. They're very close that become tractable using complete enumeration type methods. There will be improvements in the future in stochastic optimization, I'm sure. I don't think that that's really the major problem. In order to be able to use those methods in practice, you need to know the average patient acuity of the patients in the recovery room. How many patients at a given time can a nurse take care of? Typically, it's binary, 1 and 2. That would be, for example, on paper in retrospect. But in real time, for real time decision making on the day of surgery, it isn't binary. It's constantly fluid. Why is it different for decision making on the day of surgery? If you have a situation where you have several different operating rooms, 5 operating rooms are finishing in the next 15 minutes, and there are only 3 recovered room beds, you want to pick and choose which of the operating rooms get their patient in the recovery room. But to do that, you need to have real-time information, and it's not going to be a method of phone calls with every single room coordinating. The computer has to help. How do you have, on the day of surgery, real-time information for acuity? Well, you have to take advantage of the electronic medical record data, right, to be using that information for the managerial decision support. Here's a good example, an analogy. Remember, clinical systems are quite homogeneous because a patient is a patient whatever country they are. We're all built the same way. But recovery rooms are not constructed the same way. There is enormous diversity, and so many hospitals are cobbled together with like walkways across high roads and so forth and things like that. So on the one hand, right now, many, many people are struggling with getting electronic medical records into hospitals. Right? But eventually, over 5 to 10 years, I think it is realistic to say that in the majority of recovery rooms, you know essentially when every door is opened. You know, if it's a restaurant analogy, every appliance is open and closed. You have all the transactional events are being collected in real time. That really will be there. You can see it down the road in the recovery room for decision making on the day of surgery. So in the restaurant analogy, it's also you know when every order is taken and completed. Here's the question, though. How are you going to implement that at 1,000 different restaurants that are not a chain? Every single one is different. Because it very much, one of the things about the acuity of patients relies upon whether the nurse can see the patient. It's physical line of sight. All right? It's knowing, for example, that there's a curtain between two patients and so forth. It's knowing this architectural issues are highly heterogeneous. How do you quantify mathematically that architectural heterogeneity is one problem. But more than that is, how are you going to install that and maintain it at every hospital as you change the system? Now, I actually, from a research point of view, I mentioned the recovery room because we've done this at several places. I've gone to the hospital for weeks at a time. We've got in the computer the architectural information. No problem. Here's the problem. They make a change in the architecture and nobody knows that the computer knows what it knows. Somebody there has to maintain it. So we're coming back to the educational issues in some ways. How are we going to train these individuals? Right? But similarly, I think this is an area where the mathematics is frankly very weak. It is the issue of quantification of how not just the questions of how physical architecture influence long-term, from a strategic point of view, how do we best build our outpatient surgery center in order to try to maximize the flow? I think for decision-making on the day of surgery, a lot of it is given whatever we have, how do you quantify that architecture so that you can use the signals in a real-time sort of way for decision support on the day of surgery? And that issue of how to fuse that information is very much of an unsolved problem. This issue, because hospitals tend to be very different physically from place to place, I think is a major, major problem. We don't know how to train the people to do the work successfully. When I say that, it's not just a matter of maintaining it in a given location. A lot of it is also the matter of there just needs to be a lot more mathematics in this particular area. How to obtain that data in a practical sort of way. More and more I'm seeing places are talking about different types of video cameras, getting pictures of organizations. But how is the pictures then going to relate to implementation type processes? The next area where I find that I simply cannot adequately address the challenges for the organizations involve that of individual physicians. There are nice piece of work from Montreal over the years looking at the issues of what should be the bottleneck from a societal point of view when it comes to surgery. It should be the surgeons. Right? And the reason is we know that capital should not be the limiting factor from the point of view of doing surgery, because otherwise we'd run operating rooms 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Many hospitals don't even run them 8 hours a day, 7 days a week. Capital is not the bottleneck. Doesn't matter what country you go to. Nursing is not the bottleneck because it takes many fewer years to train nurses than it does physicians. Anesthesiologists are not the bottleneck because anesthesiologists care for patients of many different specialties. The thing for surgeons is if they're doing two cases per day and you cancel one of the cases, that's a lot of time is wasted. There's less ability to move from task to task. It's highly poisson. So what is the bottleneck at an overreaching level for tertiary surgical suites? It's the surgeons. Now, I'm going to give you an exception in the second to last slide about the role of intensive care units. But for now, let's focus on the surgeons and, to a lesser extent, anesthesiologists. From a societal point of view, if in the long run, the highest expense is the training of the surgeons and, to a lesser extent, the anesthesiologists. You got to figure out a way to increase their productivity. To some extent, that is going to be using multiple operating rooms. But it's going to vary surgeon by surgeon. Because it's going to depend very highly on how quickly the individual surgeon operates. It's going to depend very quickly on how that surgeon schedules his or her clinic. Well, the surgeon may not schedule his or her clinic. The hospital may schedule the surgeon's clinic. But it's going to be very heterogeneous, person to person. I personally am very skeptical with the idea of stylized problems that consider the idea of running more than one operating room per surgeon as compared to, for an individual Dr. Dexter, my wife, okay, what should she be provided? Now, progressively, the information available is going to expand. And with that type of information, what are the different types of opportunities for intervention? For some surgeons, you're going to want to change how they schedule their clinics. For other surgeons, you're going to want to do is change, for example, how the patients are scheduled. For other surgeons, you're going to want to change the patient flow. Right? Many hospitals will focus a lot on trying to reduce the setup and cleanup times in the operating rooms. And they'll say it's because the surgeons want it because it'll increase their productivity. But for the same amount of money, if you were to offer the same amount of money in terms of societal cost of that surgeon and say, instead, we're going to have that resource at your clinic, they would say much better, so to speak. But it varies. It's going to be heterogeneous by individual. The way I think about it is, think about, suppose for sake of argument, you want to increase the productivity of all the engineering faculty at a university. This is basically the same idea. The years of education are equivalent, including postdocs and stuff like that. And it's roughly the same type of concept, except for the fact that the creative process is very effervescent and hard to quantify. The clinical process is not. And ideally, what we'd like, especially out of anesthesia, is a lot less creativity and a lot more standardization. And regardless, you're going to have a large amount of data in the future. I understand that for many hospitals, as they struggle with implementing electronic medical records, the idea to say that in 5 years, you will reasonably know every single clinical interaction in real time, every single clinical and non-clinical appointment of a physician in real time, all right, and every single telecommunication encounter in real time seems hocus pocus. But there are plenty of hospitals out there that have that data flow available. So here is the mathematical issue. Suppose, for sake of argument, you have nearly, literally complete knowledge of the location and the complete schedules of a physician for a year. Suppose there is perfect retrospective knowledge, absolute complete knowledge. From that perfect knowledge, how would you calculate for that individual how to increase their productivity? And I don't think it's clear how to do that mathematically. And I think that is very important. It's the focus on the individual. If the bottleneck is the surgeon and to some extent the anesthesiologist, that's the bottleneck, so to speak. Now, I'm going to talk about the intensive care units in about like 5 minutes. But 85% of surgery is outpatient, and the percentage of outpatient is growing, and it's going to continue to grow. And more it will be that the bottleneck is the physicians. It has to be, because otherwise you'd run outpatient surgery centers 24 hours a day. Well, even if, for sake of argument, mathematically, you have all that data available, and you solve that optimization problem, which I think is a tremendous need, now make the information realistic. And to what extent, how are you going to then be able to address the fact when you have realistic information? So I kind of separate it as the stochastic optimization problem with a known mean invariance as compared to you actually have to estimate the mean invariance with very limited data in some circumstances. But even at this point, even with a known mean invariance, I perceive the problem is unsolved. Now add the question of how are you going to provide that information to the individuals? not interested in people's opinion about how to provide the information, not from, let's say, an industrial point of view in terms of whatever will sell, but actually studying the process of providing that quantitative data, that mathematical optimization results, and seeing how does that individual understand that? How does cognitive style influence that individual's understanding of the optimization results? Discrete event simulation. I have sat on panels, separate as a, in terms of the research hat, so many panels and listened to so many people over the years say how animation of the discrete event simulation increased the manager's use of the tool. Why is it in anesthesia and surgery we have no data to support the hypothesis in terms of the value or lack of value of animation? What is the role of animation in communicating mathematical results for a point of view of decision making? When is there a role of animation? Not people's opinions, but the scientific evaluation of the role of animation or the lack of role of animation. If we're providing information to 45 separate anesthesiologists about how to increase their productivity, is that on a daily basis, a weekly basis? Is that on a monthly basis? And is that such a thing as a dashboard? So again, let me kind of separate that notion of a dashboard from what it is that the University of Iowa does. Hospitals send data, you know, every 4 months, we analyze it automatically, we send them reports. No problem. That's easy. Because it goes to a group. These are decisions that don't involve the individual. Now, in this circumstance, if we're going to provide the information to the individual, if you have a large corporation, right, you can have, for example, a decision support group who sets up a dashboard for the corporation. But in these hospitals, the physicians are typically aren't part of the hospital. What is the, quote, corporation? And who's going to pay for this? So one of the challenges when I think about this communication type issues is that most likely, I imagine, I don't know, some consulting firm, whatever, are going to provide that information to the individuals. So the platform, as are you going to have 45 separate pieces of paper, that platform issue, which has to be studied cognitively, I think is very important. So again, I perceive the need for the stochastic optimization piece, but then studying the computer-human interaction piece and the frequency of it. The natural way of looking at this problem is to say that this is sociological. This involves organizational behavior. It involves team culture type issues. That it isn't particularly something which is one-on-one, that it doesn't lend itself in terms of mathematical study. Turns out not to be true. Now, in my field, my group, other groups from a research hat, when I mentioned, for example, we kind of plow the money we get from doing statistical consulting into research, we try to understand people's use of technology. And here's what we found consistently. We don't find a role of organizational behavior. We find psychological biases. These are individual biases that occur, and they're very domain specific. They're related to the education that individuals get, those individuals who work in operating rooms. So the idea is, would it be sufficient, so to speak? I used to think that trying to get this technology about educational techniques of mathematics into my domain of anesthesia and surgery was an issue of reading articles in other domains and they would apply. As the editor of the section on economics and policy in anesthesia and analgesia, I thought a lot about finding articles in human factors, researchers who are doing experiments like with undergraduate volunteers, and it was simply a matter of getting them to be willing to write a good review article for the field. Turns out, absolutely would have been incorrect. Because if the results turn out, which I'm not going to go into detail, to be so domain specific related to the educational process of the people who work in the operating rooms. What it turns out to be is a situation is that everybody who works in operating rooms learns one operating room at a time. When I'm a trainee, I'm assigned to one list of cases in one operating room at a time. So I learn a set of heuristics, of rules of thumb, of behavior, which are very optimal for one operating room at a time. But when you're finished training and you're a manager, now you're responsible for making decisions among operating rooms. Behaviors that are optimal one operative at a time, which you spent 9 years learning and training, performed quite poorly when applied to different decisions among operating rooms. But that is the very inherent, totally inherent to what makes surgery different. Non-preemptive processes, small numbers of cases, the period of greatest variability is the non-preemptive portion. So again, when I'm trying to address what do I think is the unsolved problems, it's how to address the idea of work specifically in the one domain. Okay, right on track. Now I'm going to do, as I've been mentioning up to this point, that the from a societal point of view, bottleneck in terms of surgeons, physicians, so to speak. For patients who are going to intensive care units, that's absolutely not true. All right? Intensive care units are running 24 hours a day. For those surgeons who are admitting patients to intensive care units, the intensive care unit should be the bottleneck. From a societal point of view, the intensive care unit is a bottleneck. I'll give an example recently of a paper. There was a special issue of Healthcare Management Science, and there is an optimization, a group, very, very good work in the Netherlands, group Aiden and colleagues, in terms of methods of planning the days of the week that surgeons will operate, incorporating not just the mean, but also the variance of how long the patients are going to remain in the intensive care unit. Most patients are staying in the intensive care unit for only a series of days, so the variance is actually a discrete probability distribution, which makes the problem quite difficult. And they showed the value of incorporating the variance when you are choosing the day of the week that the surgeons are operating. They also showed, as everybody knows in this field, the value of a poll-type system. So in other words, if the bottleneck is the intensive care unit, you need to have a lot of patients and surgeons be relatively flexible to operate when the intensive care unit is available. I'm confident that over the next 5 years, 10 years, there'll be increasing maturity of the stochastic optimization. I think for these particular problems where you have the intensive care unit and where the surgeons are relatively available, the issues like, for example, Brian described about how you schedule is just extremely important for these types of problems. The stochastic optimization will improve. But from the point of view of somebody in industry, where my kind of when I'm going out every single week to different hospitals, I actually don't think improvement in stochastic optimization behind Aiden is actually the burning issue. The problem that I don't really understand is how to implement this to help an individual surgeon understand the benefits to him or herself. And so I had a friend, Chuck Hoag is a very famous anesthesiologist at Johns Hopkins, a cardiac anesthesiologist. He read the paper in Healthcare Management Science, he did a literature search and so forth, and he's like, how do I use this problem? His challenge was the following. It was precisely what I described previously when he went to actually saying, how do I actually go ahead and implement this? He said, "Is at my hospital, I can get access to all the calendaring information. We have electronic medical records and so forth. But how do I communicate to the individual surgeon what to do, so to speak?" I think that this interaction of the mathematics and the communication and the computer-human interaction is a major unsolved problem. And Chuck said, welcome to use that as a specific example. It was very timely. So overall, I perceive that there's quite a lot of applications in operations research, i.e. management science and so forth, in anesthesia. The techniques have gotten very good for many types of problems. Right? But when it comes to decision making on the day of surgery, where the knowledge needs to be provided in real time, that is areas where we're very, very problematic. It comes down in part to this issue of education, the educational system, and I think for that there needs to be science done in terms of the education. We're really challenged in terms of we need to have better work from a mathematical point of view and in terms of signal processing, combining the idea of physiological signals with physical architecture. But how do you get that physical architecture information, and then also how would you carry that out, so to speak, at an individual hospital? And related to that, then the idea of providing information to individual people. And for that, can just start with doing mathematics of saying you have data, large data fusion type problems, large amounts of information, even with perfect retrospective knowledge. How would you provide information to individuals to increase their productivity when what they're doing are tasks that are relatively non-preemptive tasks, as compared to the majority of service industries where the tasks are preemptive. And I think is what's fundamental, what makes surgery so different, is that fact that it's a service industry with non-preemptive tasks, with large amounts of variability. And I've got 5 minutes for questions, hopefully.